The most interactive sports talk show in Houston continues now.
What's happening, Paul? What's up, Paul? Most interactive show, and I really enjoy that aspect of it. Y'all keep it up.
Get involved in the conversation by dialing or texting 713-780-3776. Here's Paul Gallant.
The most interactive sports talk show in Houston. On the table for today, Raphael Stone's qualifications to be Rockets GM, especially considering he is, from the sound of things, a very meddlesome GM. It's based off of John Wall. It's based off of Stephen Silas. It's based off of people who are more connected to the organization than me. I don't really get it, how he has gone from, you know, joining the Rockets organization in 2005 as what, with his background, makes sense as somebody who's going to operate on the business side of things, how he has drifted over into the actual general manager side of things. Maybe he's not doing the scouting and all those other things, but it sounds like he is definitely meddling in the actual coaching of the players on the court. Anyway, we're still waiting to see what's going to happen with Sean Payton, head coach of the Houston Texans. Just kidding. I wish I could report that. Sean Payton. We don't know where he's going to end up this coming season. But here is some actual good news. According to ESPN's Jeremy Fowler, the Texans would be considered as the best option for Sean Payton if he were to walk away from his NFL analyst role with Fox Sports and return to the sidelines. The actual quote from the Fowler piece, "It's a rebuild, but one Payton would have time to make into a champion. This is a job on Payton's radar, and I'm guessing Houston is desperate enough for a winner that he could have major influence on personnel." If you listened to the 30-plus minute word salad press conference that Nick Caserio gave last Monday as they talked about Lovie Smith, and it really felt like Cal and Hannah McNair wanted Caserio to be up at that podium so that he could sweat it out and realize that he's got a lot of pressure on him. At some point during that interview, Caserio said that he would be willing to walk away. I don't know if I 100% buy that, but I do buy into the idea that Caserio is going to perhaps defer more than he has in the past. That makes sense. Sounds like he himself has been too much of a control freak the first couple of years. And while I don't know what this team could have done from a rebuilding a roster standpoint in 2 years to get back from where they were with the Bill O'Brien cap situation and the lack of draft picks to where they're at now, plus the head coaches, I'm not sure what those head coaches really could have accomplished with anyone, let alone with the talent less roster that the Texans largely had. But with Caserio taking a step back and maybe Payton as his partner, things could work out. There was, though, some discussion, and I saw it online, and I do think that we're getting a little bit crazy, like we're Charlie Day and Always Sunny in Philadelphia, down in the mailroom, smoking cigarettes, ripping darts, and just drinking a ton of coffee, haven't slept in days. We're trying to overanalyze every single quote that has come out of Sean Payton's mouth publicly. But when Payton was on with Colin Cowherd earlier this week, Payton said something that had a lot of head wheels turning here in Houston.
The teams that have openings, I'm not going to say are broken, but they've had problems. That's why there's an opening.
Right.
And so I think that element's critical, the ownership element, and philosophically, you know, because there, and I've said this, and I hope it's not looked at as an indictment on certain teams, but there are a number of teams. It's hard to win in this league, and it's certainly harder to win in this league if there's internal problems before you even play an opponent.
And a lot of people hear that last part. They heard about how the Texans very likely did a Zoom interview with Sean Payton this week. They added those two up together, how you can tell from afar when an organization isn't a very good one. And let's be honest, even the biggest Texans Bobo out there, even Debbie the Texan would probably tell you, no offense, Debbie the Texan, we love Debbie the Texan. She's a very nice lady, but she is like the most positive Texans fan I think I've ever met in my life. I think everyone would admit that right now this organization is a bit of a laughingstock. And still, when you're adding on top of that, that they did the interview via Zoom and that Sean Payton can tell when an organization isn't very good, you start to get skeptical. You start to have some doubts. But I do think there's a lot of stock to be put into that Fowler report. I think this is the second best job available. I think the Carolina Panthers are the best job because I think that David Tepper is going to pay you everything that you want, and he will be patient with you. Where with the Texans the last couple of years, I do think that there would be patience, but I also can understand where you might not perceive patience for you. But let's be honest, Peyton's a different head coach than David Culley, Lovie Smith. I'm not talking about the white versus black thing. I'm talking about the Sean Payton's been a damn good coach in the NFL, and it's been a while for Lovie Smith, and Culley's never done anything remarkable as a coach in the NFL, let alone as a head coach. So he, you know, long tenured, good career as far as assistant coaches go and stuff. And he did get to be a head coach for a year. Not many guys can say that. But anyway, I'm moving all over the place right here. I want to come back to where we're at right now. The price for Sean Payton might be the issue. So I was of the impression, and I based it off of what Sean Payton had to say in that interview with Colin Cowherd, that the Saints wouldn't be looking for more than like one first round pick in exchange for Payton. But per Jeff Duncan of the New Orleans Times Picayune / NOLA.com, Saints GM Mickey Loomis is seeking compensation similar to what the Oakland Raiders received from Tom Brady in exchange, from Tampa Bay. I can't read. Let me read it again. Mickey Loomis is seeking compensation similar to what the Oakland Raiders received from Tampa Bay in exchange for John Gruden in 2002, with two first-round draft picks being the starting point. Two first-round draft picks. That's where I start to wonder about the feasibility of this. Because also, I guess he's looking for a four-year, $100 million contract, which is insane. I would imagine that's more money than Bill Belichick even gets. But I don't care about money. Money is not a problem for the Texans. It's not a problem for the Panthers. There are some organizations in the league where I think you can definitively say that money isn't the issue. The Texans would not have fired back-to-back head coaches if they didn't have money. They wouldn't have. They're totally fine paying the buyout. They're totally fine saying, yep, we messed up on that one. We're not thrilled about it. And we are throwing some money down the drain, but we are totally willing to spend money again. How many more times in a row will they be willing to go about it that way? I'm not sure, but Mark Davis with the Raiders, Mike Brown with the Cincinnati Bengals, those guys would not be willing to fire somebody after a bad season if they had just given them a long-term extension. You saw that with Josh McDaniels this year with the Raiders, and you've seen that in the past with the Bengals and Marvin Lewis. Marvin Lewis, after a while, you're like, okay, he is who he is. He's decent as a head coach, but he's not taking us any further than where we think we can go.
It's probably also why Brandon Staley still has a job.
I would agree. The Spanos family, Sean Mapes, great point. Not a very rich ownership group. I mean, they're subleasing that stadium. That is the Rams stadium. The Chargers just happen to be in it, and no one goes to their games. They shouldn't have left San Diego. That's another conversation. Money's not the issue. The draft picks should be, if it's that. If two first-round picks is a starting point, damn. Now, think about this. There might be a lot of organizations that are like, are you serious? No. That's what Mickey Loomis wants to start with. I don't know if Sean Payton took leverage out of the Saints' hands by saying, oh, maybe one first-round pick will do it. I think that Sean Payton, wherever he goes, he would like to have the necessary draft picks to help a rebuild, and when you're joining a team like the Houston Texans, that's one of the perks, is that there are two first-round picks in each of the next two draft classes. So he might not even be thrilled with the idea of being traded to an organization that doesn't have everything it needs. But if it is going to indeed cost two first-round picks for Payton, that would be where I walk away. But it's going to take that for me to walk away, and it should take that for you to walk away. I am really surprised by not the negativity about the idea of Sean Payton as next head coach of the Houston Texans. That makes a ton of sense. Most people are very skeptical about the even possibility of it. But when we're talking about with Sean Payton, this organization could do better if they go in a different direction. That is starting to get too loud for my liking. To the point where I think we need to sit down with a lot of the hosts here at ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I would point to Jeremy Branham. I would point to some of the guys on the Wheelhouse. Not Jake. Jake is willing to make the trade for Sean Payton, even if he thinks, you know, some things about the Texans draft that are perhaps a tad hyperbolized based off of just 1 year. Like, I agree with Jake. Like, you should not be looking at Sean Payton with a side eye. You shouldn't. This is a possible culture resetter. You're better than him? Oh, like you were better than Peyton Manning in 2012? So, on the other side, the Texas Minister of Truth is coming back, and he's going to give some of these folks an intervention because, geez, Louise, you're acting like these people are better possibilities than Sean Payton. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. This is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
As far as interviewing our head coaching job, you got to do it because of why people first. How difficult would that be doing that during a week of preparation for
a New York Giants.
That's Eagles defensive coordinator Jonathan Gannon, who's been interviewed before by the Houston Texans for their head coaching gig, when asked about the distractions that being thought of for a head coaching position can present during the week before a playoff game. Very football guy answer, New York Giants. That is one of the guys that the Texans are supposedly considering. Not named Sean Payton. And my God, the fact that some of you people feel like that person is in the same conversation as Sean Payton, I just want to know what is it based off of. But first, I got to tell you about something awesome. This is a giveaway that we have for you, the people. Adam Sandler. Heard about him? Comedian, actor, screenwriter, producer, singer. He's coming to Houston this year for his tour. And he's bringing his outstanding tour to the Toyota Center on February 13th, where he's going to deliver his unique brand of comedy and song. I think Sandler's very underrated as a singer. Caller 3 to 713-780-3776. 713-780-ESPN. You win a pair of tickets to see the show, and you can get the tickets now at livenation.com. Adam Sandler, the musician, very underrated. Adam Sandler, the master of skits. You had a MP3 player before iPods were a thing back in the day. You might remember, like, he had just skits. I think it was like Tollbooth Willie was one of them. I've always been a massive fan of Adam Sandler's humor. Billy Madison, for the longest time, was one of my favorite movies. But great singer, great, I think, song creator. Not just the Hanukkah song, which everyone knows about, or the turkey song for Thanksgiving, but the song that he did about Chris Farley a couple of years ago, too, and the other musical numbers that I think he did on Saturday Night Live back in the day. I love Sandler. Maybe he's not throwing 100 miles per hour anymore, but I 100% want to go to this. So again, caller number 3-713-780-3776, 713-780-ESPN. Okay, I think that we got to look at ourselves in the mirror here in Houston. I think we got to realize how desperate times are. This organization, the Texans, are in a world of trouble as far as trying to figure out what to do next. And while I like some of the things that they are trying to do because they realize that they have alienated a lot of fans in the city, that only goes so far. Winning is going to change any people's perception of this organization going forward. And maybe you can't do that with the ownership group. Maybe Cal and Hannah McNair can't have people thinking differently about them. Okay, fine. So that means you got to find somebody who can. And I am just surprised by the strong belief that I'm seeing online and hearing on this station in candidates who are maybe going to be good head coaches someday and maybe will never be anything more than an assistant. I will take Ben Johnson as an example because I know that that is the apple of Jeremy Branham of the Killer Bees' eye. And Ben Johnson is a guy who has done, I think, a fantastic job with the Detroit Lions this past season. I would have been intrigued by the idea of hiring Ben Johnson. I would have been. Johnson is a guy who, with Jared Goff under center, has turned the Lions offense into a pretty impressive unit statistically. Just take a look at it. But also think about this. We are looking at a guy who's been a part of the Lions coaching staff since 2019, who this year is finally in an expansive role. That could mean that his career is going to continue with its upward trajectory. It also means it could fall off of a cliff. And there's a lot of certainty that people are speaking with when it comes to some of these coaching candidates. I think we all got to pause for a second and say, okay, we all have our hunches of who's going to be good and not good when it comes to coaches. And the same thing with people that the Texans could theoretically draft. But we don't know a bleeping thing. We don't. The hiring process, when it comes to coaches in this league, it's really tricky. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to hire somebody away who is an assistant coach on a team that overachieved or played very well over the course of one season. We've seen that happen in the past. But then think about Matt Nagy, Kansas City Chiefs, and that offense. How did that work out with the Chicago Bears? Think about a couple of years ago. The Eagles hire Nick Sirianni. Did anyone think that was going to work out? Sirianni is a legitimate candidate for Coach of the Year with what he has done with the Eagles this season. Mike McCarthy, hate him all you want, retread NFL coach, comes back with the Cowboys and gives them back-to-back playoff appearances for what, the first time since the 90s? You take a look at a coaching candidate and you might think the guy's a home run. You might think the guy's going to suck. The reality is you really don't know what's going to happen until that person is put in place. So I'm just stunned by the confidence with which people speak of somebody like a Ben Johnson. And I'm pointing to Jeremy, but I'll just point to anybody else here. I would like Sean Payton because I feel like there is enough pelts on the wall to merit this guy coming in and potentially being the second coming in the NFL of a Bill Parcells kind of figure. A guy who can help reset a franchise from the joke that it once was to being something really consistent. Parcells did that with the Giants. Parcells did that with the New England Patriots. He was a little bit earlier when he did it with the New England Patriots. He didn't coach that much longer afterwards. He went to the Jets for a couple of years. He was with the Cowboys for a couple of years. Started to bounce around. And I suppose that that is a possibility with Sean Payton. If you're going to be giving him 4 years, $100 million, the idea that he might potentially walk away or something like that ahead of time, that is something you might be thinking about to yourself and thinking, well, I don't really want this possibility. But I just don't get why everyone is so sure about like random assistant coaches across the league. Do I have to be the person that's saying, hey, the Texans, they're going to make a choice and we'll see what happens? Does that make me a bobo? Does that make me lazy at my job for not having a concrete hot take on it? I don't know. But once again, here I am. Merely the Texans minister of truth.
Some say he gaslights.
Who are you? Minister of propaganda?
Others say he spreads disinformation.
Please disperse. Nothing to see here.
But he's just telling you what you need to hear.
Yes, I created a lie. But because you believed it, you found something true about yourself.
Paul Gallant is the Texans' minister of truth.
You lied.
I exaggerated.
I've said it before. I don't think this is the worst job available. I think it's the second best job available. You want to hate me for that? Fine. But I feel like the Panthers is the only job that is better because of the deeper pockets. The Broncos, there's too much pressure there. The Cardinals, you're stuck with Kyler Murray and some of the bad juju of that organization. And the Indianapolis Colts, you got Jim Irsay running the show. Plus, Chris Ballard's still there. I think that this is the second most attractive gig open. And with that in mind, you do have a pretty good pick of the litter. And if you're saying no to Sean Peyton. I just don't understand why or why he would be low on your list. Like, you are going to definitively do better with Jonathan Gannon, Shane Steichen, Ben Johnson, or, hell, the guy I like, Mike Kafka. What are you basing that off of? Because you'll also have the 12th overall pick. Now, if we're talking about trading multiple first-round picks, which it sounds like the Saints are trying to portray to the world that's what they want, but might not actually be the case. If that's what it's going to cost to get Sean Payton, okay, there I am willing to walk away. But a 12th overall pick, that's going to make you more willing to roll with all or any of those guys? And let's just think about some of the other second-time head coaches across the NFL. Like, you people are putting faith into guys who have never had this position before. Some will swim, some will sink. But, okay, Bill O'Brien. These aren't guys I'm throwing out as possibilities for the Houston Texans. I'm just saying, Bill O'Brien, Jason Garrett, Marvin Lewis, Mike Zimmer, Chuck Pagano, Ken Whisenhunt, those are guys who have been coaches in the league and have had decent seasons in the league. I would say that over half of those guys will have better careers than most of the guys that we just listed as far as head coaches in the league. But there's so much certainty being operated with here. Hell, Jim Caldwell, Frank Reich, those two guys have been interviewed for head coaching gigs this offseason. They, I would say definitively with Jim Caldwell, Caldwell will have had a better head coaching career than many of the people that are right now being floated who have had no previous head coaching experience. They've just been in a situation that makes them seem like an attractive candidate, also because they're young and because you don't have a track record on them, you think the possibilities are endless. Well, the possibilities could be an absolute disaster. And look, you know, we talk about the retreads of the world. Maybe Ron Rivera's not doing so hot in his second time around, but here's some coaches that were retreads that got a gig and were good. Mike McCarthy, Andy Reid, Doug Peterson thus far, Pete Carroll, Bill Belichick. And again, I'm not saying to look for a retread. I'm just saying that there's a degree of certainty that people are speaking about coaching candidates with, and I just, for the life of me, I don't get it. Where is it coming from? You're going with your gut and saying it would be a mistake to trade for Sean Payton. As far as sure things, nothing is closer to a sure thing than trading a draft pick to bring Sean Payton in to be the head coach of this team, to help run this football operation, to help get this football operation back on track. But Ben Johnson, I guess. I really think some people here at the station, some people listening on the radio, I think you need to sit down, look ahead, and like just wonder why it is that you are so married to a prospect with experience working with Jared Goff and having a Lions team winning games for half of a season. The Lions offense was pretty good for most of the year, though, statistically. Just tell me why. Paul Galancho, ESPN, 97.5. 925 713 780 3776 to call in, to text in as well, in the most interactive sports talk show in Houston. I'm going to be heading out of town early this week. Going to Breckenridge to go skiing. You know, I got the mustache ready to go. I got some ridiculous looking 80s suit that's going to have a bunch of people questioning my sexuality again. Also, I mean, look, I'm going to be listening to 80s music all weekend long, like Montage from South Park and Push It to the Limit from Scarface. So we got to make some picks. Right now, divisional round, pick four. It's up next. Paul Galancho, ESPN 97.5,
92.5. ESPN 97.5. There's a lot of games you can watch this weekend.
He's got another one. Unbelievable. He is gone. Kiss McKinney goodbye.
But Paul Gallant is going to pick six games.
There's six.
Pick six.
Well, that's got pick six written all over it.
You need to watch.
This is exactly what we needed.
Twitch chat gets a little juicy from time to time. If you want historical rants from Paul Gallant, you might be able to get them.
I just told Paul about a holiday.
Yeah. I'm not going to get back into that. This is why you got to watch on Twitch. You see what a real crazy person I am and how easy it would be to cancel me. Anyway, hey, we got four games this weekend, and I'm not going to be in tomorrow. It's going skiing in Breckenridge. Will I survive? Good question. I don't know. I'm not feeling my knees are stable. I'm kind of like Lamar Jackson right now. Except for I'm going to play for free. How about that? Anyway, I don't know what's actually going on with Lamar Jackson. It's an awkward situation, no matter what. First game of the weekend, the Saturday special. Trevor Lawrence. This record on Saturdays is pretty ridiculous. 37-0 when he plays a football game on a Saturday, as his Jacksonville Jaguars are 9-point dogs against the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. Lawrence played like absolute doo-doo in the first half of that game, and you need to remember that because he did that at home. He didn't do that in L.A., which probably would have even been a home field for the Jaguars as well. He did that in his own backyard. He is now going to Arrowhead Stadium in front of, I think, one of the best crowds in the NFL. I think the AFC West has maybe two of the best ones in the Broncos and Chiefs crowds. I think they're loud. I think they're smart fans. And I think they can get in to a player's head. Not to say that Lawrence has never dealt with that before, but I don't think that the ACC is really comparable to the SEC. And this is going to be the kind of environment where you have to wonder, is Lawrence going to have early jitters like he did in this past game? He clearly has shown the ability to shake him off, but it's another thing to shake him off on the road against a team like Kansas City.
I mean, he did win in the Carrier Dome in the ACC, so please.
The Loud House, that's what they used to call it. Named after an air conditioning company, and yet no air conditioning. Also kind of funny. They changed the name of it. Probably smart to do that at some point. But we look at the Chiefs. They had the first round bye. The defense has some serious questions. The offense is not quite as explosive as it used to be. But I do think that the Chiefs bring a level of balance offensively that the Chargers were not able to bring to the table this past weekend. The Chargers can't run the ball. They have the talent to run the ball. The Chiefs have actually been surprisingly good running the football down the stretch, at least compared to years past, where you didn't think they could run it at all. Isaiah Pacheco, they stumbled into something with him in terms of he's at least decent. I think that Kansas City's defense is going to allow points. They are going to allow Trevor Lawrence to have a couple of drives. But ultimately, Patrick Mahomes is the best quarterback in the NFL. I think that the Chiefs win this one by 10. I think that Jacksonville will make it seem close, though. So I'm going to take the Chiefs and the points. I'm looking forward to this game. I am. I think the Jaguars, and I had a lot of doubt about Trevor Lawrence going into these playoffs. I have less doubt about it, but I'm still sitting here waiting to be impressed by Lawrence. I've yet to really truly be impressed by a full 60-minute performance by Lawrence in a game that matters. And I'm talking about at the college level too. Maybe that's a little bit unfair because he did have some nice moments in like in the college football playoff. But I don't know. I've watched a couple of games with Trevor Lawrence and I'm like, something is off, and it's specifically the accuracy.
I'm also going to take the Chiefs. The Chiefs have struggled covering like these large lines this year in the regular season, actually the last few years in the regular season. But I do think that, I mean, they are a team that really does seem like they hit an extra gear in the playoffs where they like stop messing around a little bit and still will mess around. They'll do, you know, they'll do zone reads with Travis Kelce or whatever.
Yeah. But, or the little ring around the rosy play that they did.
Well, they did that in the regular season.
That's true.
But they also probably cover the spread in that game too. Against the Raiders. But I think that the Chiefs, you're going to get a locked-in Chiefs team.
I think so, too. It's been a couple of years. Remember, like they won the Super Bowl. That was pre-pandemic. It's been a while, and they've had a lot of almosts. I don't know that necessarily means that they're going to be back in the Super Bowl, but they are the most battle-tested team playing this weekend.
And playing against probably the least battle-tested team in the playoffs.
Right. And again, that team, they gave so many opportunities to the Chargers. They got to come out quick. You have the later game, the Saturday night game. The New York Giants are 7.5-point dogs against the Philadelphia Eagles. Got to say, big Dexter Lawrence fan. Dexter Lawrence, pass rusher for the New York Giants, saying all the things that make me cackle. First off, I don't know if you saw him mic'd up against the Minnesota Vikings in last weekend's games, but it was fun.
Now Pilates be getting me right, Leonard. That Pilates be getting me right. Yeah. Yeah. Inflexible. Oh! 5'6". You gonna take me out? You gonna take me out? You give me more hugs than my girlfriend give me. Come on, man. I know it's hard. You signed up for this.
So, Lawrence is funny. Lawrence also had some interesting comments about whether or not his mama is going to be coming to Lincoln Financial Field and to be amongst all those Eagles fans as a Giants fan.
You know, I know their fans going to be out there, and, you know, I hope we travel well.
How do you describe that environment?
Like you said, gritty. Hard nose. I told my mom she can't come to the games because she'd go back at them, but it should be fun, and I'm excited.
There is a part of me that would love to see a I don't know where Dexter Lawrence is from originally. I know he went to Clemson. There is a part of me that would love to see Dexter Lawrence's mom going at it with some just trashy Philadelphians. So, last time these two teams played, the Eagles decimated the Giants. I got to say, though, New York is operating with a confidence right now that makes me think that it is a possibility that they somehow win this game. I think that their defense is the big issue here. Jalen Hurts officially off the injury report. Might be a little bit rusty, though. The Eagles are the team playing with house money in these playoffs. I think that the Giants have the coaching edge with Brian Daboll. But from a talent perspective, this is a mismatch. The Eagles should win this game handily. I think that the Eagles will win, but that the Giants will cover.
I'm in the exact same boat as you. I think Eagles win, Giants covers the most likely outcome here, especially with 7.5.
Yeah.
The hook on that is really, I mean, the Giants can definitely keep this game in a touchdown. Like you said, the Eagles haven't been soaring, playing super well the last few weeks.
No, they haven't.
And some of that is Hurts actually getting hurt. But
right.
But, I mean, the last game of the season, Hurts did play. They had to play for the one seed. And
yeah.
They're all right, but they weren't awesome.
We'll see if he's actually 100%. Shoulder injuries do take time to heal. He's off the injury report. What does that mean? Sunday's game. I'm on the Cincinnati Bengals bandwagon. The Bengals have an amazing fight song. Look it up. Hear that Bengal prowling. Mean and angry. Here he comes a growling. Lean and hungry. An offensive brute. Run, pass, or boot. He's tough. Rough. It's an actual fight song. It's fantastic. Anyway, they are the most confident team in the playoffs. Their cockiness is outrageous considering, like, half, check that, 60% of their offensive line dead. They can't play. Perhaps an extreme statement to make. Like, they're out. They can't play. Here is Zach Taylor, the head coach of the Bengals, just swanging that thing around.
I mean, we know that we're the defending AFC champions, you know, and so there's an edge to this team where we're not an underdog to anybody. And so I think that's just been the feeling we've had all season. We don't really care what anybody else says about us. We know we belong in the field with every team in this league.
Joe Mixon, meanwhile, running back for the Bengals, has been cocky all season long. We've played clips from him before. He is continuing that, like, yeah, we got this.
And at the end of the day, we got all the cards right now. So we got to do whatever we can to go in there and play Bengals style of football. We're going to do what we want to do in terms of we got to go out there, execute on offense. We got to be hitting on all cylinders. On defense, we got to make stops, create turnovers. Special teams, field position. Everybody in this locker room going to matter. Every down and distance and situation is going to matter. Every critical moment is going to matter. So we got to do whatever we got to do to prevail in these situations. But, you know, like I said, man, going into it, I mean, we ain't no underdogs. We know we not. And at the end of the day, we just got to go out there and get the job done.
I like this Bengals team a lot. I am rooting for them. Buffalo has been strange to me all year. They, I think, top to bottom, are the best team in the league. But their biggest problem this year has been sloppiness. They cannot play 60 minutes worth of complete football. I just don't buy that they can do it. I like Josh Allen a lot as a player, but his DNA lends itself to fumbles, to interceptions. The Bengals pull off the upset on the road here in the rematch of the game that wasn't finished. They're the four-point dogs. I just don't see Buffalo playing this thing clean. I know maybe the Miami game's a wake-up call for them, but there have been a couple of moments this season that you could point to and say that was the wake-up call for them. The only thing that I think could change is if they just, like, showed on the Jumbotron DeMar Hamlin, who has been showing up for practice and not practicing, but at the team facility over the week. If they just show him on the Jumbotron every second they possibly can to make those crazy Bills fans lose their minds and start throwing objects, I said in quotation marks, on the field.
I have no feel for this game. Like you said, like the Bills have not been like the no-doubter Super Bowl favorites. Like we've kind of viewed them for most of the year, really.
Yeah, going into the year, like, oh, 17-0.
Yeah, and so I'll just take the points. It really is. I feel like these two teams are pretty evenly matched, so I'll just take the plus four with the Bengals. I have no idea who's going to win, but I'll just take the points. Maybe it comes down to a field goal.
Yeah, this is the game I'm looking forward to the most. This is the best game of the weekend. I think it'll be back and forth. I don't think that the Bills are going to crap themselves, but I do think the Bills are going to probably make more mistakes than Cincinnati. Could be wrong, though. Again, this is the game that is going to be the most fun. Cowboys and 49ers. The 49ers, four-point home favorites. It's really about, do you trust Brock Purdy to keep doing what he's been doing? At some point, it's got to stop, right? At some point, he's got to run into a wall. What the Cowboys defense did on Monday was not quite as impressive as what Dak Prescott did. But if Geno Smith was able to give that 49ers defense some issues in the first half, and if Brock Purdy had some issues against the bad Seahawks defense in the first half as well, I think that there will be more issues like that against Dak Prescott for the 49ers defense and against the Cowboys defense for Purdy. So I don't feel great about this, but I'm taking the Cowboys to win this one too. 4-point dogs.
I'm riding with Purdy.
Riding with Purdy.
I'm riding with Purdy. Maybe not next week, but I'll definitely... I mean, it's the Cowboys making the NFC Championship game.
It's got to stop at some point, though.
Yeah.
It's got to stop.
What, the...
This run is ridiculous.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the Cowboys' drought of not making the championship
game. There's that, too. There is that, too.
But, yeah, I'm rolling with Brock, Jeremy Lin, Purdy.
Jeremy Lin, Purdy. Good God. That's not a good comparison.
No.
Now, Jeremy Lin...
Now I kind of want to go with the Cowboys.
Yeah, Jeremy Lin's biggest problem... And he did have some good moments here in Houston, but whenever he screwed up, it was like, oh my God. It looked so aesthetically bad when he messed up, like he didn't belong. And he was a good player, but when he messed up, it was like, whoa, dude, you need to sit on the bench for a little bit. Classic Harvard. Paul Gallant Show, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We wrap up the show with garbage time, with TCU picking the garbage heap to add to their coaching staff. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5. This is the Paul Gallant Show on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Got a sassy UPS driver. I got a package delivered to me. The guy was calling me over the course of this past segment, called me four times. I was wondering why my phone was vibrating. So I just sent a text, I'm working. I don't know who the number is. The guy sends back to me, yeah, me too. Okay. Settle down. Anyway, TCU has hired Kendall Briles to be their new offensive coordinator. He was most recently at Arkansas. You hear Kendall Briles, you're going to think Art Briles. Art Briles was fired before the 2016 season at Baylor in the wake of a sexual assault scandal an unprecedented one that also led to the firing and or resignation of the school's president and athletic director. Kendall Briles was not directly implicated in any wrongdoing. He stayed on as offensive coordinator in 2016 before going to Florida Atlantic. Clear stepped down as offensive coordinator in 2017, then the University of Houston as offensive coordinator in 2018, Florida State as offensive coordinator in 2019, Arkansas, like, slowly moving his way back up the ranks. To be perfectly honest, I don't know what Kendall Briles did or didn't know when it came to all of the things that were taking place at Baylor. I do have a hard time buying into the idea that he was completely unaware of what was going on. Does that mean he's unhireable going forward? And I honestly don't know the answer to that question. Because we're talking about a guy who shares the name with a CEO of a sports program that had one of the most indefensible scandals take place on its campus, especially considering the pious nature with which Baylor as a university carries itself. And again, it's a Baptist university, so I understand it, and I'm not trying to knock it. I'm just saying, considering that happened at that university and was looked the other way at that university, it is something else. Does Briles not deserve another job in coaching because his dad is Art Briles? Because I think as far as we know, that's his link to this scandal.
Well, he was also the offensive coordinator and quarterback's coach.
So there's probably...
So he was on the staff.
There's probably... You could probably guess that some of those situations he was aware of. Were there offensive players that were implicated in that side of things in terms of sexual assault allegations?
I don't know specifically.
Right, because I remember, I do remember on the defensive side of things, there were a couple of guys. I don't on the offense. So we're really, I'm entering into lawyer territory with plausible deniability here. The chances are he knew. I guess one more time, though, if you are his son, the son of Art Briles, what is it that you can do? What is it that you would do in that situation? Just a question I'm asking there, because this has been widely crushed as a move. And I understand why. I mean, he also, all this goodwill you built is TCU. This is sort of like when the Astros traded for Roberto Osuna to an extent.
Yeah. And
different,
it's also,
story, but not that different.
It's also like, I don't know, he's not like an awesome offensive coordinator. Like, he's not like some killer offensive coordinator.
That's the main thing. Because I saw Joel Anderson, who I think is very funny, TCU grad, played football there, say, wait a second. I get that we're desperate, but like, or not that we're desperate. I get that, you know, no one's above
it's
anything
college
in college football.
Yeah.
But really? This guy? And I think that's a fair argument against it.
Especially when all the, you know, transgressions or the dark cloud on his resume comes from, like, your rival. Your direct rival and, like, kind of, you know, the school that you're most closely associated with.
Right, right.
You're also a Christian university.
Yeah. Like,
it's in the name.
I remember when I spoke with somebody from TCU because I applied there. I did get a scholarship to go there. Didn't end up going there. I remember I was told, like, but we're not a Christian university. And I was like, what?
You got to change the sign.
Literally, you're TCU. Now, that might have been one person, but I remember them telling me that. I was like, wait, what? That's kind of strange.
That's the general, what's it called? Stereotype, I guess.
Of TCU?
TCU.
Okay.
It's like, it's Christian, but not really. I think, they're not like associated with any specific like religion.
Right, right. But the C's there. Strange. Anyway, garbage time really quick. So, a French nun who is believed to be the world's oldest person died a few weeks before her 119th birthday. A spokesperson for her nursing home in southern France said Wednesday, Lucie Randon, known as Sister André, was born in Aix, southern France, February 11th of 1904. She survived COVID-19. That's impressive to do that in your 117,
probably.
Yeah. She was known to enjoy a daily glass of wine and chocolate. My question is, damn, how long was she a nun? 119 years old. How long of that period?
Probably like 100 years.
This is legitimately like the most holy person of all time.
Well, of recent times.
No, who's lived almost 100
Oh, who's years actually lived 100 years?
As a nun.
I was going to say, I know a guy who's lived 33 years. He's a pretty holy guy.
That's not me. I'm talking about this woman. Okay, whenever she started being a nun, just think about that. Like, let's just assume 18. She spent 101 years in service. That's incredible. And honestly, like, high five to her. What? You're laughing. That's no, really impressive.
Just high five to the 119-year-old
R.I.P., but high five.
The highest five up to heaven.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Sean Mapes behind the glass. I'm Paul Gallant. I will be out tomorrow, but big thanks to everybody who tuned in this week. I hope you enjoy the weekend's games. Hopefully, I do not die while skiing. So, for our texters, our callers, and our tweeters and our twitchers, I am merely Paul Gallant. Sean Mapes is behind the glass. So long, farewell, have yourselves a wonderful weekend. The Killer Bees are up next. Peace!
That's crazy.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports.